And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. We don't give enough credit to signs, and we really should. That sign over there tells you, great French fries. That sign over there tells you, this is your exit. And look at that legendary sign. It's the Motel 6 sign. It tells you, a great night's rest at a great price. Book online at motel6.com and use the code CPRedEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. Look for the signs. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a great price when you use the code CPRedEye. That's the letters CPRedEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel6.com. That's a great deal. And that's Just Something I've Noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. Let's begin a Friday. Woo! Gary, how's it going?
I'm doing good now.
Yeah?
Really, I think this may be the first time ever that I came in here and, you know, like you, I have reading glasses everywhere.
Right.
And yesterday I came in and realized I forgot to bring my reading glasses in. But yes, of course, I have an extra pair here.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that extra pair, and I took them home, and I showed up today with no reading glasses. Thank goodness you had an extra pair.
I do. I have two extra pair, actually, on me right now.
And thank you so much, because it was, I mean, it was about 20 minutes ago when that realization hit. It was not a pleasant time, and I had no time to go back home or no time to go anywhere in order to get reading glasses. And it's like you walked in and said, do you have, right, so I don't have reading glasses. She goes, I do, and they're almost my same power. So,
yeah.
Actually, they're a little bit more powerful, so I can read everything very clearly.
After my parents catapulted me off of Krypton, when I got to Earth as a baby, my eyesight was different, and immediately I needed reading glasses. It was weird as a baby going into, you know, Walgreens, getting reading glasses. But then when you learn to fly, you get to Walgreens much quicker, and so that happened. I always have at least two pair on me, and there's also a pair in my car. So I've become that guy where I've got two pair. This actually happened recently. I had, you know, you hang them off your shirt.
Yep.
That's, by the way, if you want to walk through a store or an establishment or anywhere in public and basically tell people you don't care what they think of your age, that's the way to do it. Hang those readers right off of your T-shirt.
I do that all the time.
I do it all the time. I love it.
And
you kids get out of my yard.
Well, that's the thing. I did. I had a pair in each car. Mm-hmm. I have normally two in my Merce. I mean, my European handbag.
Mm-hmm. You know, Merce sounds more masculine.
Merce, okay.
Yeah, European handbag.
European handbag. Mm. Well, that comes directly from Seinfeld.
Yeah, I know. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Exactly.
Depends on what your goals are.
So I have two there, one in each car.
Mm-hmm.
Then normally I have my bifocal sunglasses, because it's much easier during the summertime to have the bifocal sunglasses.
Right.
That way you don't have to keep switching pairs.
Right.
So I normally have one pair. So I normally have two in each vehicle, two in my bag, one here, and I take one and put it in my pocket when I leave home. And it still, I had all that redundancy and still forgot it.
Yeah.
Is it old age?
It is. By the way, I didn't tell you this.
What?
But when I came in, you said I forgot my reading glasses. You were actually wearing your reading glasses at the time. Yeah, who made the joke the other day? I was driving around for an hour the other day looking for my car keys.
I've done that where I can't find my reading glasses and they're on my head.
Yeah.
That's happened to me before.
Yeah.
So we got a great show ahead.
We do.
I mean, so much happened yesterday. And I'm telling you, with the Republicans in charge of the House,
mm-hmm.
there's so many hearings going on, you can't keep track of them all. I'm not kidding.
No.
It's impossible to keep track of them.
That hit me yesterday around, mid-afternoon, and I was like, wait a minute, hold on just a second. You know, which hearing is this? I have to look at the accused. I'm sorry. I have to look at the people that are testifying to know which hearing it is.
Well, it was really interesting yesterday. I mean, Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger were in front of Jim Jordan and the members of Congress. And I'm telling you, there's so much. We can't get through all the audio. Just in that one alone, in that hearing alone, there was so much audio. I will say this. The Democrats don't care about what happened to Twitter.
No, they don't.
They do not care. Let me play this audio cut because this was one of the interesting things when the Democrats were attempting to get Matt Taibbi to give up one of his sources. This was fascinating. Mm. Here we go. All right.
Mr. Taibbi, I want to follow up a little bit on the ranking member's questions. When was the first time that Mr. Musk approached you about writing the Twitter files?
Again, Congresswoman, that would...
I just need a date, sir.
But I can't give it to you, unfortunately, because... This is a question of sourcing, and I don't give up. I'm a journalist. I don't reveal my sources.
It's a question of chronology.
No, that's a question
of
sourcing.
Because you earlier said that someone had sent you through the internet some message about whether or not you would be interested in some information.
Yes, and I refer to that person as a source.
So you're not going to tell us when Musk first approached you?
Again, Congresswoman, you're asking me to you're asking a journalist to reveal a source.
So then you consider Mr. Musk to be the direct source of all this?
No, now you're trying to get me to say that he is the source. I just can't answer your question.
Well, either is or he isn't. If you're telling me you can't answer because it's your source, well, then that the only logical conclusion is that he is, in fact, your source.
Well, you're free to conclude that.
Well, sir, I just don't understand. You can't have it both ways, but let's move on.
No, he can. He's a journalist.
No, he can't, because either Musk is the source and he can't talk about it, or Musk is not the source. And if Musk is not the source, then he can discuss
No one has yielded. The gentlelady's out of order. You don't get to speak.
And she's out of order because he's interrupted.
The gentlelady's not recognized.
You're not recognizing my time.
He has not said that. What he has said is he's not going to reveal his source. And the fact that Democrats are pressuring him to do so is such a
not. We're asking him about his conversations with Musk.
The gentlelady has not yielded you time. You don't get
to
talk over
I have not yielded time to anybody. I want to reclaim my time, and I would ask that
you... There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And... Jordan had to, you know, because the Democrats are trying to portray Taibbi and Schellenberger as right wing Trump supporters.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's amazing to watch it.
Yeah.
And Jordan said, you know, stop this. Who did you vote for? Biden. Mm-hmm. Who did you vote for? Biden. Mm-hmm. Did either of you vote for Trump? No.
Right.
You know, it's like, are you Democrats? Yes.
Right.
I mean, it was just. And I mean, they
and they can't get this is the problem. They can't get over themselves. They really did. You and I said this, that a couple of things, you know, back in the Obama years, they thought they had won the White House forever. They certainly believed that they had won the conversation with the advent of social media. But really where social media went, I would say in the last decade and then kind of it accelerated over the last several years. in that anything that was conservative or even questioned anything liberal, any post or idea or story that was liberal was considered to be propaganda, far right wing, misinformation, all of it, it would get you canceled. The left is angry that they lost that ability, but they're angrier, and you could hear it. Reveal your sources. These are journalists. You can't do that.
And you know what they did? They called him. They said, "No, you're a so-called journalist."
Then let's call some people from the New York Times and other sources, and let's talk about their sources on the whole Russian hoax thing and a million other fronts. We can do this all day. But they're angry, and you can hear it.
Yeah,
and they don't care about freedom of the press. They don't.
No.
They don't.
They don't. It, like I said, it was amazing where they were going yesterday. I mean, I was fascinated by it because this is a case where the public has already made their mind up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen the polls. The polling shows overwhelmingly that the people in the United States, the voters believe, the citizens believe that, Twitter has been, biased, mm-hmm. biased to the left, mm-hmm. and that there has been government pressure on them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just, trying to paint and, they both said all the journalists, everybody in the mainstream media has abandoned them.
Yeah.
It's like there is no support in talking about the FTC wanting their names.
Right.
You know, why he goes and we haven't even got into this really. There's been so much to cover this week. But they said, scares the daylights out of them. You know, as journalists said, the FTC has no business asking a private company, what journalists they're talking to.
Yeah.
They have no business. The government has no business. Goes that's attempting to intimidate us and to back us off. And, it's something that Republicans have gone, crazy about. You have no right. There's been no laws broken here.
No.
The FTC has no business
right.
asking a private company, what journalist are you talking to?
Right.
None. If you can find law breaking and wish to send the FBI on Twitter, on Twitter, then go ahead and lay out the charges. But this has got nothing to do with the Federal Trade Commission? The hell are you talking about? It's got nothing to do with this.
Nope. But this is the MO of the left these days. We'll weaponize any and every agency to come after you.
Yep. I mean, when you actually see what Democrats, how they think, and you see it in person and how blunt they are, it's pretty frightening. It really, really is. There's nothing. Not even Trump compares to the Democratic Party of today. You can't even make that comparison. The things that they wish to do, to censor, to intimidate, is mind-boggling. Really is. And these are liberal reporters.
Remember when Trump was calling the members of the media the enemy? And they were, while attacking the media, he doesn't believe in freedom of the press. All of that is gone.
Gone. Gone. Completely. Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have held it up on that. If I were being questioned that way, I would have, my first response, as they pressured me to issue my sources, reveal my sources, the first thing out of my mouth would be, are you dense? Do you know what freedom of the press is? Go to hell. You work for me.
As I told you, you and I both would have a problem ever testifying before Congress. And another thing that they did was they would ask them questions, and you didn't know where they were going, and then they'd make an accusation and wouldn't let them answer.
Right.
That seemed to be one of the preferred ways of questioning Taibbi and Schellenberger.
Right.
And the whole thing is to make it suspicious that they're actually right wingers that are defending Trump.
Right.
It's really amazing to watch this because what they're doing is they're playing on the ignorance of the public that may not know who Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger are.
Right, right, right.
But if you
because most people probably don't.
Don't. No. But if you know about them, you know that they are Democrats and have been there are Democrats and there are Democrats that are journalists that have looked to where the political activism that has gone on today, and as we talk about it, the reporters are political activists. That's even when the Mueller report ended and you have Republicans saying, well, now the media knows that they have to get back, and it's like, guys, shut up.
Yeah.
We said this to Republicans.
Right.
They're not journalists. They're political activists. Yeah. And so the remaining Democrats that are still journalists looking for the truth and the ones that hate censorship and honor freedom of speech, even if they disagree with how much money we should spend on welfare, for example. Mm-hmm. They still believe in the First Amendment.
Right.
They are now the enemy.
Right.
Anyone who believes in the First Amendment, anybody who believes it's wrong for government to be involved in censoring, you're the enemy of the Democratic Party.
Yep.
Understand that.
Right.
And they, as Jordan said to him, they said, yep, we said this earlier, they're going to come after you.
Yep.
And now they're coming after you
yep.
to destroy your life because you believe in the First Amendment.
Right.
It was really fascinating to watch that yesterday.
Well, and if you're in the liberal media and you're thinking about writing even a true piece of journalism that questions anything on the left, expect they'll come after you this way too.
Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's not always easy to spring back from the harsh days of winter to warmer months ahead. From de-icing chemicals to hidden debris underneath snow and ice, winter conditions can do serious damage to your truck. Here's a must-do maintenance check to help you minimize downtime and stay rolling. Make sure your fluids are at proper levels ahead of spring. Fluid is to trucks what blood is to the human body. Low fluid can be just as harmful as no fluid, and the damage this will cause to your truck is unavoidable. Pay attention to your engine oil, coolant levels, power steering fluid, transmission fluid, brake fluid, and differential fluid. This report is brought to you by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
And now for a segment called Just Something I've Noticed, brought to you by our friends at Motel 6. Just Something I've Noticed. There's a lot more yawning these days. Have you noticed that? Yeah. And the bad thing about yawning, it's contagious. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I do know that's true. You see somebody else yawn, all of a sudden, you got to yawn. You know what helps to curtail the yawning? How about a great night's rest at Motel 6? Book online at motel6.com. Use the code CPREDEye to get 15% off your stay at Motel 6 or Studio 6. With almost 1,500 locations across the country, there's almost always a Motel 6 or Studio 6 nearby. And truck parking is available at most locations. Enjoy a clean, comfortable room at a price you will love when you use the code CPREDEye. That's the letters CPREDEye, all one word, for 15% off your stay at Motel 6 and help curtail the yawning. That's just something I've noticed. Brought to you by Motel 6.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Cronin, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Here's more from the hearing yesterday with Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger.
But the truth is, we want to focus on protecting the First Amendment. Mr. Schellenberger, you're a Republican?
No, I'm not.
You got any pro-Trump bumper stickers on your car?
I voted for Biden.
Voted for Biden. You don't have any MAGA hats laying around your house, right?
I do not.
Yeah, but you said earlier, both you and Mr. Taibbi said, this is the most chilling thing you've ever seen as journalists. Mr. Taibbi, the same thing. You're not a Republican either, right?
No.
You didn't vote for Trump. I mean, this is about protecting the First Amendment. Mr. Taibbi, I want to read from your Twitter file number 9. You say this: after weeks of Twitter files, the Bureau issued a statement Wednesday, referring to the FBI. Here's what the FBI said. It is unfortunate that conspiracy theorists and others are feeding the American public misinformation with the sole purpose of attempting to discredit the agency. You then follow up. This is why I think you're an award-winning author. You then follow up. They must think we're unambitious if our sole aim is to discredit the FBI. After all, a whole range of government agencies discredit themselves in the Twitter files. And then you go on to, in this particular Twitter file, to talk about what Mr. Bishop was just talking about, the GEC at the State Department. You talk about the CIA. You talk about the DOD. You talk about the FBI. You talk about the DHS. You talk about the Foreign Intelligence Task Force, which is a combination of all these. But there was one agency you didn't mention because you didn't know at the time. One agency, one. You had almost the whole alphabet, but you didn't mention one agency, the FTC.
And there you go. That is now coming, wants to come after them.
Right, right. Weaponize any and every agency.
What's interesting, this is all about weaponizing the federal government, and in the process of doing it, they're weaponizing the federal government.
Yeah, exactly. No, good
the
point.
The Democrats, yeah.
The Bonus Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you would like to get in. This isn't going to, people talked about it yesterday, but it's not really going to go any much farther. The president had his 2024 budget proposal released Thursday, and here's what they're writing. The press is reporting that President Biden's 2024 budget proposal released Thursday would cut the deficit by $3 trillion over 10 years. Way to bury the lead. The plan raises taxes by nearly $4.7 trillion and would increase revenue and spending to unprecedented plateaus as a share of the economy. The president's $6.89 trillion proposal is a political document that sets up his reelection campaign. Its spending and tax proposals were rejected in the last Congress under Democratic majorities and have no chance of passing with a GOP House. But the budget shows where Mr. Biden wants to take the country if he wins a second term. Bernie Sanders would be pleased. What did they say that by... in 10 years, we'd be over $50 trillion with this proposed budget from the president. But it's not going to go anywhere.
No,
there's been a lot of talk, increased defense spending to record levels. Well, that happens every single budget.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Right, right.
It's not, the defense budget isn't going up as rapidly as it used to, and it's consistently has a smaller share of the federal government, but increasing to 3.2% is actually a cut with inflation.
Yeah, right.
So understand that inflation has affected, so much of it here. And I think the Center for Responsible Budget put out their their analysis on it, and it, and they talked about how it would. Oh, I had it here somewhere, but they talked about how it would take us to just record levels of actual debt, and understand that when they do this, everything is done in the most positive light. Everything is figured with
best case scenario.
Right, the best case scenario, and we know it's never that case. What I liked was Democrat Ro Khanna of California. Spending during COVID is a factor in record inflation, but we needed spending in part to get out of the recession.
What recession? As far as I know, there wasn't a recession.
Apparently, one Democrat's admitting that there was.
Okay.
So first thing I'm thinking of, I'm thinking of my buddy Richard, who wrote me the other day. You know, he was just, you know, talking about inflation, and I'm thinking Democrats love, you know, manipulating the manipulating as the Fed has done over the last 12 years, 13 years, manipulating the dollar by buying our own debt and keeping interest rates super low, so they could borrow trillions of extra dollars and have interest on that extremely low. And so they're like, well, we like that Fed policy, which now is not going to continue because you can't continue stuff like that. And now they want to manipulate the economy based on government spending.
Yeah.
Let's do it from both ends.
Yeah.
So we're gonna sit there, and I can see a Democrat coming out and being just like Paul. Well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to keep we're trying to keep inflation below that 2% mark. So manipulation of the dollar is okay, and printing money to buy our own debt to keep the interest rates low is a positive thing for the economy, because then we can borrow more money, and through the increased GDP, because the GDP, as we revised it a few years back, now counts for more transfer of dollars, the movement in money, instead of actually the production of goods and services. We can make sure that we always keep that GDP a little higher than it actually is,
right?
Because we're not actually talking about the gross domestic product, which would mean the increase in the product. We're actually talking about the movement of dollars and their effects. So there's a lot of hypotheticals even in the GDP, and so now they're saying, well, let's be like the Fed. We need to spend now to keep us out of a recession. And then we get an inflation, and we need to spend more because we need to help the people. And if we keep spending more, we'll have inflation, but we don't have a recession. And it's government's role to balance this.
Yeah.
Through spending and the Fed manipulation of the dollar.
Yeah. You got it.
Oh, yeah. That sounds right.
Oh, it sounds perfectly reasonable. Well, here's the list of things that you can get away with when the majority of people can't name the three branches of government. Oh, I'm sorry. We only do a 5-hour show. We won't be able to get even to a fraction of that list. We apologize to all of our affiliates. We'll have the Red Eye Files. And we'll post the list on the internet. It will still take you years to get through the list of things they can get away with when the majority of people can't name the three branches of government. We'll come after you. How dare you get involved in the Twitter files? Makes you wonder what we haven't learned yet from the Twitter files that they're so afraid of.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating day, because yesterday and this week in general, and the last couple of weeks, because the Democrats just didn't bring any of this stuff up in Congress.
Right.
And so now you're seeing how they're defending themselves in a variety of different issues. And it's fascinating and at the same time terrifying to see where their mindset is in government and what they believe their role is and how they will attempt to destroy, how they'll attempt to destroy now Democrats who believe in journalism.
Yeah.
That's the threat. If you believe, if you're in the liberal media, and quite frankly, who was it that said the other day? The New York Times isn't a liberal publication.
It was on MSNBC. Chris Hayes.
Yeah, Chris Hayes.
It's not a liberal. And you and I looked at each other and went, well, compared to where the Democratic Party is, as far left as they are, which is, isn't it amazing?
Mm-hmm.
I just, this is thought, I'm sorry, it's a Friday, so we're just going to be bouncing all over the place. But it's still the same topic. Isn't it amazing that the Democrats who called Trump a fascist,
mm-hmm.
Look, there's criticisms I have of Trump all over the place. Mm-hmm. And one of them is for not understanding the basics of politics, that he should have had a landslide election because he can't communicate for whatever reason. And I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. I can't get inside a person's mind, but he should have had a landslide in the last presidency, but he can't shut up.
Well, one thing he couldn't do is talk. The first thing he needed to do was talk about his own accomplishments.
Well, right. When I say doesn't shut up, he doesn't talk about the right things. Mm-hmm. Wall Street Journal said it. You and I have talked about it before because we were saying it. Just stick to the five or six issues. Don't go down every stinking rabbit hole.
I think they had a list. I want to say they had a list of 12 things. And really, we've always narrowed it down to that handful of things, five or six items that really connect with people, that where you win on the issues with the American people, where the American people stand with you. But here's the thing. It's only a matter of time before the New York Times is, well, they've gone far right wing.
That's a great point, though.
Take one story. They're not the New York Times. They're the New York Post.
Oh, speaking about the election, Washington Post saying that sources say DeSantis is running.
Yeah.
Just to throw that out there. It keeps coming up as breaking news, and it's like we're into so much, and it's like we've known he was running anyway, but it's...
One thing that I've been watching is the stories over the last month or so about mega donors and how, according to those reports, they're really piling up the cash to put it in his corner. You need... I don't know what the number is. Up until recently, it was $1 billion, you know, in terms of running a campaign for the White House. Now,
to go through the entire thing from primary through.
Yeah. And so it doesn't mean you have to spend the most money or more than your opponent. Hillary spent more than Trump in 2016. That did not work out for her. And as we've said, if the candidate is wrong or if the message is wrong, you can spend all the money in the world and you're not going to get it. I think it's no surprise. I just don't know what the timing on the announcement would be. It will be interesting to see if he waits until the end of summer. It was for Bill Clinton. He got in October of 91. So he could wait that late. He could wait and say, okay, I'm going to let the chaos kind of play out. And then you kind of create your own space by doing that. And you also avoid a lot of the back and forth by doing that. If you're not officially in yet, the summer will be chaotic. And then you jump in.
Well, here's the thing. Do you want to be in the early debates, or do you want to, you know, let Trump go back and forth with the minor candidates that are in there? Well,
right.
I mean, if it's only, I mean, if it's Trump and Nikki Haley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's his name? I can't think of his name.
The guy whose dad is a mailman, or was a mailman, that always runs Kasich.
No. I can't think of his name. He announced it. He's the entrepreneur.
Oh yeah. Well, by the way, he and Nikki Haley, after they announced, kind of disappeared, didn't they?
He's out every day. I see him. I see him. Well, Nikki Haley to me is
He was out every day before that. But I mean, he doesn't get the same coverage. He's definitely out there, no doubt.
Well, and the last week, Marianne Williamson's gotten more.
Well, yeah.
I mean, they had her on the Sunday morning news shows. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty thin stage. It really gets down to two on the right. And the discussions on basically, all right, if Trump gets it, who would he pick as his VP? And it, you know, I mean, it's everybody from Nikki Haley to Carrie Lake. You saw that during the whole CPAC thing.
Yes.
You know, and we'll see what that turns out to be. And what's interesting is, I haven't seen much in the last week or two talk about who DeSantis would pick. And I think that's because those who really want him to run and are on board fully already for DeSantis are thinking, well, I give him the confidence that he would make the right choice. And B, it's not about the choice for Veep. Right now, it's about him getting in and being able to win the primary. First things first.
Oh, Ramaswamy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. I just couldn't think of his name.
Yeah.
But there you go. So,
right.
I mean, right now.
He was doing a lot of, and he's been on a number of podcasts and everything else, especially in the week after. And then there was some chatter about him. But you've got, as we've said, you've really got to get out there and you got to make some headlines. And we'll see.
He does have a social media presence, so I haven't seen him on social media every single day.
He's had that all along. That's the one advantage he has coming in.
And I haven't seen that Nikki Haley.
No, but Ramaswamy had that built in as he announced. That's something that he's always had.
Now, the problem is, for him, name recognition. Mm-hmm. And I just made that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
I couldn't remember his name.
Well, no, and he gets a lot of support from conservatives, but it's just he doesn't have that name recognition yet.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara. DeSantis is in, according to the Washington Post and others.
Top of the hour news is brought to you by House Products. Visit houseproducts.com.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the planet, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and you can listen when and where you want. If you can't listen live overnight. There you go. All right. Here we are for the Friday show.
Mm.
This came out 2 days ago. Really a remarkable admission. Jenna Ellis, one of the former lawyers for Donald Trump, admitted that she lied in a variety of certain things back in 2020. on the election. She was censured for it. I'm just going through right here. I have the entire thing here with me. This is the State of Colorado Supreme Court. The office of the presiding disciplinary judge. She agreed with all of this, by the way.
Right. Yeah,
she agreed. Yeah. It's not like they did the charges and she didn't agree with it. She agreed what she misrepresented. And they go through each and every point of it. November 20th, respondent appeared on mornings with Maria on Fox Business and stated, "We have affidavits from witnesses. We have voter intimidation. We have the ballots that were manipulated. We have all kinds of statistics that show that this was a coordinated effort in all of these states to transfer votes either from Trump to Biden to manipulate the ballots to count them in secret." Now, we called her on it back then. And the reason we're bringing this up is, you know, we got a lot of flack. We got a lot of flack for telling the truth. And if someone made a charge that we knew was ridiculous, we called them on it. And we took a lot of stuff from our listeners on this.
Yeah.
Every single thing that we said in November, December, January, February, November and December of 2020, January and February of 2021, and since that point has been accurate. We were not wrong on one single thing. We didn't jump the gun on anything because we care about the truth. Were there irregularities and are there things that we wish to be that we wish to see be changed in elections? Yes. And we went point by point by point by point on every, because there wasn't one accusation. There were dozens of accusations. Some we said, man, those are legit and should be looked into. Some were outright lies.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that Trump's lawyers were lying about Dominion and Smartmatic from the very, it was obvious they were lying about it. They were making charges that we knew that they had no evidence. We said it from the very beginning that the governor of Georgia and the secretary of state was taking bribes from Dominion. Smartmatic had nothing to do with the dang election.
Well, and that was the clue. That was the real big tell when that happened. And then they severed ties with Sidney Powell officially. The next day, the Trump campaign, the Trump camp came out and severed ties. She had to write a letter saying she never took any money for the services she provided. And they wrote a letter. Giuliani wrote a letter. But Giuliani was also part of the lies. I can't tell you why he lied, but he was lying. And they lied to 75 million people. Those of us who voted for him. And made it sound like they had something when they had nothing. They did that repeatedly. And I've got no place for that. None. I'm never going to accept that kind of behavior, especially from those who are public servants or represent public servants. If you've got something, because this is what I expected when they announced they were going to have that press conference. They announced it the day before. I thought we were going to see them on the court steps somewhere in front of a courthouse. We just filed this. Here's a copy for the media. I thought it was on. I can't tell you what happened to Sidney Powell and why she did what she did. Can't tell you what happened to Giuliani. But now everybody knows the truth. There are discrepancies in every election cycle. You could probably find one in every polling place, at least one. There are some very real problems with the voting systems in certain states, and we've gone over that repeatedly. But that's not what this was about.
She agrees. Said, the respondent and the people agree that the respondent made 10 misrepresentations on Twitter and to nationally televised audiences in her capacity as personal counsel to then-President of the United States and the counsel for his reelection campaign. The parties agree the respondent made these statements, which violated Colorado RPC 8.4, with at least a reckless state of mind. The parties agree that the counsel was not the counsel on record in any lawsuits challenging the 2020 election results. The parties agree that respondent, through her conduct, undermined, this is, again, what she agreed to, undermined the public's confidence in the presidential election, violated her duty of candor to the public. Finally, the parties agreed that the respondent had a selfish motive, and she engaged in a pattern of misconduct. And so the reason we bring it up is because we have long memories. We don't live in the bubble of today. We sat here and we were criticized by many in our own audience for telling the truth. And it went on for a long time. And I don't know what's finally going to be resolved at Fox. But, you know, you saw the things that, you know, the more on Tucker Carlson coming out and the things that he said, you know, behind the scenes. We will never do that.
No.
I don't care if I lose everything as long as I'm telling the truth. I don't care.
Well, I'm not. I don't see where a lie is going to get me anywhere. And if you're doing it for the money, then what wouldn't you lie about?
Right. I hate the fact that the party that represents me most on the issues, when anyone lies in that party, I am extremely frustrated and angry because there is no reason for conservative Republicans to lie ever.
No. No. I expected action out of those three standing at that podium that day. That's what I expected. When they announced it the day before, I fully expected we're going to see them on the steps of a courthouse somewhere and saying, we just filed in this courthouse, and this is what we filed, and here's your copy for the media. Here's your copy of what we filed. Here's what we found.
And if I heard one more time, because when we started bringing out and people started admitting, many of our listeners have criticized us, well, okay, well, it was a lie. But they do it. I don't give a damn if they lie. They have to lie on the other side.
If you want to act like a liberal, feel free to act right. like a liberal. If you want to accept their tactics, then that's your choice. I don't accept that. These are public servants. And the lawyers who represent the public servants, I have no patience at all for them lying to 75 million people. They should be held accountable, and at least one of them has been so far. I know things were going on in the courts with Sidney Powell and things going on there. I don't know what's going to happen long term, and the fact of the matter is that you lose all credibility, and there's no way to deny it now. Because the only thing you hear now is, yeah, but there were discrepancies. There are discrepancies in every election.
And we addressed every one of those.
Yep. Those are the things that absolutely need to be fixed. There are certain things, you know, we talked about it with the midterms. For the love of math, why does it take so long to get the results in? There are a number of things that you should fix, that we should fix, the states should fix about their voting systems. And we go through this every election cycle. In 2000, it was about Florida. And some guy named Dangling Chad.
But such obvious lies that came from the Trump camp and the Trump lawyers, in my opinion, actually hurt the movement.
Without a doubt. They did so much damage by doing that.
Right. Because their lies were so big and so obvious that to us, it may have slowed down the reform that a lot of states need.
And here's the thing, too. There was the part of the pushback was there was no way that Joe Biden beat Donald Trump from his basement. You underestimate the hatred for Donald Trump.
Yeah. well, again, as we stated way back in April of 2020, that was their campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They believe they could beat Donald Trump.
Yeah. In fact, we said before the primaries, we said, look, on the primary stage for the Democrats, it's going to be the one who can prove they hate Donald Trump the most.
Right.
And then, you know, who the one they can convince people that they can beat Donald Trump. That's where you're paring down to the winner. Your eventual nominee is going to have, that's how that's going to play out. It's the hatred for one guy. Go back and look at the Russian hoax. Go back and look at all the things they've done for their hatred of one guy. And he was their media darling until he announced he was running for president as a Republican. The left loved him. Remember the whole thing on the Billy Bush tapes? 11 years old before it came out. Why is that? Because liberals didn't care what he said on that tape. That tape didn't just pop up. It wasn't buried somewhere. It wasn't in, you know, some kind of capsule that only one person knew about it. There were a lot of people that knew about the Billy Bush tapes. And they loved him until he announced he was running as a Republican. And then he was Satan or Hitler or Mussolini. Or whatever. And yeah, that's very real. That's the pushback is, well, there's no way that Biden beat him. Biden didn't beat him. The hatred for Donald Trump. People didn't vote for Biden. They voted against Donald Trump out of hatred for one guy. That's how that played out. And it's quite unfortunate because if it's that big of a driver, then there's a lot of things we have to work out as a nation.
But you just can't say it's the hate. It's more than the hate. It's the complete lack of communication of Trump for 4 years of communicating a message effectively and going down every stinking rabbit hole.
That's part of it, but the biggest driver is the hatred for Donald Trump.
Didn't stop him from winning in 2016.
Because it didn't exist yet. I mean, you weren't into the Russian hoax fully. They didn't create the monster until 2020.
So you don't believe he could have won?
In 2020?
Yeah.
No, there are things that he could have done to improve his campaign. I can't tell you that he could have won.
Yeah. I believe. I believe he could have won.
You're saying it's possible. If you're saying it's possible, well, yeah, anything's possible.
I think it's more than...
Are you saying he would have won? There's a difference, could have or would have.
No, he could have won if he could have won well, if yeah, he, well, if he was... Have,
yeah,
that if he had shown discipline... For the 4 years that he was in office.
Yeah, well, that encompasses a lot.
Look, yes. I think, and I'll never forget getting the call from my friend Kelly,
mm-hmm.
the most loyal Trump supporter, and she called me in mid-April of 2020 and said he's going to lose the damn election because of the COVID stuff,
mm-hmm.
because of the way that he's standing up there and going down every rabbit hole and not just addressing the medical needs and then walking off. He doesn't need to be there. And she was the biggest Trump supporter you could possibly imagine. I'll never forget that when she told me that, sent mm-hmm. me that message saying he's gonna lose the election because he can't shut up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was a big deal for a lot of people, yep. No doubt. And that's also what part of what built the hatred for him.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was about the hatred mm-hmm. of Donald Trump, whether he inflicted that upon himself or they built it falsely through Russian hoax. It was the hatred for the one guy. Because you look at the accomplishments as president.
Yes.
And he nailed it.
I agree.
So they didn't like the way he behaved. They didn't like his words, as we said right. all along. It was his words.
You know, it's like, what did we say one time where people, after the election, you saw so many Republicans say, oh, so you don't like the mean tweets.
Mm-hmm.
See, you didn't like the mean tweets, so you didn't vote for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if you believe that, if you believe that mean tweets is the reason, you remember how many did you see of that? I mean, that was all over the place for a year after. Oh, now with Biden, see, just because of mean tweets, you didn't vote for him. Well, then my point would be, as a political consultant, don't do the mean tweets. If you believe, and so many Trump supporters believed it was the tweets after the election, oh, mean tweets now bother you. Well, then don't do the mean tweets.
Yeah, sure.
Stop the mean tweets.
Exactly. No, that's the American political landscape. Right. You're going to, imaging is everything. And even if you do a great job as a president and do unprecedented things as a president, it won't matter. And that will build the hatred that will drive you out of office.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Surviving and thriving as an owner-operator has just as much to do with managing costs as it does with generating revenue. Understanding basic principles of operating costs can save you thousands of dollars a year. Costs are not the same each month. If 9,600 miles are driven one month and 10,000 miles the next, two different sets of costs apply for each month. For example, if your tractor payment is $1,850 per month and you drive 9,600 miles in the month, your tractor payment is costing you 19.3 cents per mile. Drive 10,000 miles, though, and that same payment will cost you 18.5 cents per mile. This is one of your major fixed costs while paying off a truck loan. The difference in this example is only a fraction of a cent, which may seem like small change, but it ultimately amounts to $960 more annually on the bottom line. Because though fixed costs do not go down over time, you can reduce your cost per mile with more paid miles. Owner Operator Business 101 is provided by Shell Rotella. Shell Rotella, with advanced synthetic technology, is designed to help keep your rig running with more mileage and less maintenance.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, just reading what's in the president's budget. I mean, none of the, in his budget, none of it's going to go through, but listen to this. The budget brings back the wealth tax that Senate Democrats proposed to pay for President Biden's Build Back Better plan. It proposes a 25% minimum tax on the full income of Americans with more than $100 million in wealth. Which means if you have $100 million in wealth, it means you would tax the increase in value of any asset over $100 million. For example, if you're worth $1 billion, that $900 million over the $100 million, if you went up, let's say you went up $100 million in the appraised value of that by the IRS, you would have to pay 25% on the wealth of that.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
And by the way, that means you would have to audit most everybody, anybody of any considerable wealth.
Yeah.
How do you know which assets just take off? A Bitcoin, which is worth very little at one point, and then it takes off and it's worth tens of thousands per Bitcoin.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Paula, while certainly you can mess up on $1 million a year, it is far less likely than it is on $30,000 a year.
Right.
I would meet wonderful people that were struggling with a budget that was super tight. It was 100%. You need to make more money.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You're a
threat to democracy if you don't download our app, Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. On this Friday, there's just so much to cover, but we want to make sure that we play audio cuts of things that we viewed as important this week, including the Weaponization Committee hearing from Matt Taibbi and what's Schellenberger's first name? Michael?
Michael.
Michael, okay, yeah. Michael Schellenberger, they were just two of the, what was there, six or seven journalists out there that disseminated the Twitter files. Here is Schellenberger yesterday.
You've seen this censorship industry go from, well, we're just fighting ISIS, to, well, we're just fighting Russian disinformation bots, to, well, now we need to fight domestic misinformation, which is just saying we need to fight against people who are saying things we disagree with online. That's all that means. And I mean, it's not a slippery slope. It's an immediate leap into a terrifying mechanism that we only see in totalitarian societies of attempting to gain control over what the social media platforms are allowing. And so, for me, it starts at DHS, but we basically see almost every government agency involved in this.
The fascinating thing is, and this is, you know, we had talked earlier this week about, and you saw McCarthy now saying that he will release the January 6th tapes, basically across the board.
Yeah, there was clear pressure to do that.
Right.
And you know, I think that's the only way you can do that or should do that. Look, we got some feedback, by the way, on the whole Tucker Carlson thing. We don't have a problem with Tucker Carlson, and we don't have a problem with what Tucker Carlson is doing. Our point was, or at least I'll speak for me, my concern is that if you're not going to make it available widely, then it's not going to do what it's intended. It's not going to give you the leverage that you believe it will, because it will be limited simply because Tucker Carlson won't have the time to get to it all.
Well, not only that, as I stated, and I'll argue anybody on this one, the problem right now that Democrats, that's why I'm relating the Schellenberger thing to the Tucker Carlson thing. Schellenberger liberal, Taibbi liberal, Barry Weiss liberal, every single one of the people that disseminated the Twitter files, you cannot portray as a conservative partisan, and they're journalists. And so that's what's making it so hard right now. That's why the Democrats can't get any leverage, because they're attacking their own. The argument now is not whether you're a Democrat. It's whether you're for freedom of the press as a Democrat or not freedom of the press as a Democrat. The Republicans aren't really involved in this. All Republicans are doing is opening up the door for Democrats who believe in freedom of the press. There's nowhere to go here. It's like Fauci came out yesterday. He was on Brett Baer, but really Brett Baer didn't ask the right questions to him, in my opinion. But there is nobody defending Fauci now. Why? Because the evidence exists. You are connecting the dots. To give it to Tucker Carlson immediately, and that our argument was political. It wasn't the substance of it. It was the political argument. And the political argument is Tucker Carlson's viewed as a partisan. If McCarthy would have said, you guys want it and disseminate it first, I would have said no. Because it would not be as effective. Why?
Well, no,
because we're viewed as partisan. That was my point, that the whole thing is, and it's got caught up in the fact of, you know, especially with Tucker Carlson, you know, just blasting Trump. Blasting him, that text or email came out, what, just in the last day and a half? Absolutely blasting Trump, you know, and then on the air, well, not the same thing. That hurts. You need the credibility. When you're going to release something, you need political credibility, that especially with the Democratic Party the way it is now, and the fact that on the January 6th committee, the public already didn't buy what the January 6th committee did. You had a tremendous advantage there, and I think it set back the Republicans' push, because it's viewed as McCarthy being partisan, which is why McCarthy said yesterday he's now going to release it all.
Well, yeah. Look, I want full transparency, first and foremost. If you're going to release something, then release it wide. It's a given that there's going to be the accusations of, well, it's Tucker Carlson. So it's, I mean, look, they're doing it right now with Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger. It's a given it's going to be political. Anybody who reports on it is going to be seen as far right wing if they do any real journalism at all. By the way, the one lawmaker, who was it? Was it Sylvia Garcia who didn't know who Barry Weiss was?
Really?
Yeah, Representative Sylvia Garcia reveals she didn't. Town Hall had the tweet, and then Barry Weiss actually retweeted it yesterday. And here's the tweet from Town Hall. Through her line with video to accompany it, through her line of questioning, Representative Sylvia Garcia reveals she didn't know who Barry Weiss is and proceeds to ask a rather awkwardly worded question. And at that point, it was Michael Schellenberger who she was asking that question to, and he was responding. But Barry Weiss retweets that Town Hall tweet, and she writes, "I am dead. Couldn't get to D.C., but nothing but love for Michael Schellenberger and Matt Taibbi, who do a heroic job of not completely breaking down here." Like I said, the moment they started going after the freedom of the press, if I'm a journalist in that situation, you must be a moron if you think I'm going to reveal my sources.
Well, but that's the point. Remember, the Democrats only really attacked them when they had to in committee.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they've basically ignored them.
Yeah.
And that's the point. You don't ignore Tucker Carlson. You don't ignore anybody who is a partisan because they're already known as a partisan.
Mm-hmm.
Already giving it to him means it's, you know, it's easy to convince. And because your goal is to always convince the independents. You're not going to convince the partisans on either side.
Yeah, and that's so why you release it wide.
That's why you release it wide like that. So,
yep.
Yeah, they're eventually going to be attacked, but really, yeah, the big attacks from the Democratic Party came when they had no other choice because the Republicans, they either attack them or they agree with what's going on, and so they have to attack. But they're being forced to attack is different than opening up a huge door where they can say, oh, you're just releasing it to Tucker Carlson, so it's going to be biased at that particular point.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, because your idea is we're going to have full transparency on this so everybody can see what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And right. That's where you start. And that's what I wanted from the beginning and now is apparently going to happen after the pressure was put on them to do that. I mean, because that, you know, this is exactly how this needs to play out. I think Tucker Carlson does a fine job at pointing out a number of things. People are learning new things about what happened on January 6th. Now, a lot of people, I thought, knew some of those things already. But and as I'm watching people post stuff saying, can you believe this? You know, this is new information. And I thought to myself, well, not all of this is new information. And so, you know, but nonetheless, whether they forgot it or they actually didn't see it before, then great. It's always great to learn something new about January 6th or anything else. As you're learning what actually went down that day and how that played out, as opposed to what the bogus January 6th committee wanted you to believe, no, that's always going to be a plus. But you have to release it wide. And there's no way around that. There's no way to, because the problem is it's not a real release simply because no one source is going to have the ability to release it. If they had said, you know, okay, Tucker Carlson, then on FoxNews.com or wherever, they're going to have a link to, you know, where you can go and you can see all of this information for yourself. And the media is all going to be in on, and we welcome the media to do their take on it. Each of them, great. But that was the only problem that I had on
it. Yeah, the only thing I got, the only response I got on it was incorrectly stating what we said. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I got on our comments.
No, it seems actually
on January 6th.
Actually, everything that I got had something that was not correct.
Yeah. I have one here. The opening from Wednesday morning, you open by saying it's not good to bring up January 6th because it doesn't affect you personally.
Actually, we said the opposite.
Never said that.
You actually deliberately said at one point, I'm not saying this is a bad thing, this is a good thing. You actually said something of that nature.
Right. But what I was stating, the political point, I was saying the political point is the issues of the day. That's when we were talking about, not that you don't bring it up, mm-hmm. but you don't forget about inflation.
Right.
That was my point, that mm-hmm. you bring up what the public is concerned about, but mm-hmm. majorly concerned about. And again, I will say this, the majority of criticism that I know that at least I get about us is always wrong about what we said. 95% of the time, like I just read right there, what that guy just wrote, and I just wrote, I said, we didn't say that. Try again.
Right.
I don't know what else to say. We never said that. What we said was people react more. And I'm not talking about myself, and we made it clear. This is the political analysis of the public. People react more to things that affect them personally. January 6th, it's important to get the truth out, did not affect 99.99% of Americans personally.
Right.
We never said don't cover it. We said how you disseminate it is extremely important. And while you're doing that, you also constantly hit the things that are important.
Yeah.
No, the things that are important because they affect Americans every day. I haven't heard the Republicans in a unified voice pounding on inflation every single day like the Democrats would. Mm-hmm. That is our point.
Mm-hmm. And by releasing it wide, I think hopefully it will still have this effect. But the idea is to have, the Wall Street Journal editorial board or Andrew McCarthy or a number of people that can also tear it apart and also do their take on it. And by doing that, you widen the story. So the media does the work for you and not just one source in the media. You would have multiple sources on that. And hopefully that's what will still happen by releasing it wide. I hope that's the case.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you would like to get in. This didn't get a lot of play yesterday from the mainstream media. A federal judge ruled in favor of the state of Florida on Wednesday and struck down the Biden administration's use of parole to free illegal immigrants in droves that are caught crossing the border. That's the catch-and-release policy. Judge T. Kent Wetherill, the second of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Florida, blocked the Biden administration from using the humanitarian parole and alternatives to detention to mass release migrants, a policy critics refer to as catch and release. Wetherill blasted the Biden administration in a scathing opinion in support of Republican Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody's challenge to the practice, arguing that the southern border has become just a speed bump for illegal border crossers.
Hmm.
The evidence establishes that the defendants have effectively turned the southwest border into a meaningless line in the sand. This is from the judge. Sand and little more than a speed bump for aliens flooding into the country and prioritizing alternatives to detention over actual detention, and by releasing more than a million aliens into the country on parole or pursuant to the exercise of prosecutorial discretion under a wholly inapplicable statute without even initiating removal proceedings. There is nothing inherently inhumane or cruel about detaining aliens pending completion of their immigration proceedings, the judge said. So And he said bluntly, he said, if you look at the law, this is based on the law that Biden isn't following. And we've, how many times did we say this?
Yep.
Biden's not following the immigration law.
Right.
And finally, a judge has called him on it. Now, there's a hold on it pending appeal, I think, for at least 7 days on it.
Right, yeah.
Who knows? Biden may not appeal it because, hey, it's election time.
Well, and if you don't appeal it, what do you do? Because my thought is, do they do like the Obama administration did with the secret court, with the FISA court? You just ignore their directive? You know, you're not enforcing the law. Well, okay, sorry about that. You don't appeal it, but you just keep not enforcing the law.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. You know, we were, just talking earlier about the January 6th tapes and how we believe McCarthy should have done it. You know, McCarthy coming out, you know, already some response saying, well, they had to give it to Tucker because that's the only person that, you know, they trust. Well, that didn't work out because now they have to widely disseminate it again. Mm. The problem was twofold. First off, we're a partisan. When I say you're partisan, that's not an insult. It's just what you are.
Right. We'll do insults later in the show.
Yeah. I mean, I'm partisan. As I said, if McCarthy would have given it to us, you guys disseminated first, I'd say, no way. No, I want it to have credibility, and immediately we'll be accused of being partisans, which we are. We're partisan for a particular political idea that is represented by a party that we vote for, even though we criticize them.
It's often represented by a party that we vote for.
Exactly. But the other thing is the news that has come out. And again, you, because of the lawsuit, because of the Dominion lawsuit, Tucker Carlson, Hannity, Laura Ingraham, none of them can talk about it.
Yeah, right.
And so you don't know what the response is. And Fox News, of course, is responding and saying that Dominion is taking it out of context. But the stuff on just Tucker that was released just the other day, you know, if you're a Trump supporter, you have to be going, whoa, because the judge is releasing it. And January 4th, 2021, Tucker Carlson texted out about Trump. Excuse me. I hate him passionately. I can't handle much more of this. Now, Fox has said they've taken it, you know, out of. Let me just see exactly what Fox has said on it. In a statement, Fox News accused Dominion of dishonestly portraying key figures' internal communications. Okay, what that means?
Okay.
Who knows? It's a generalized
kind
comment.
Of broad, yeah.
Yeah, they don't hit each one specifically and say he never said that.
Right.
But these texts aren't real text. I hate him passionately. I can't handle more of this. We're all pretending we've got a lot to show for it because admitting what a disaster it's been is just too tough to digest. He wrote in another text message referring to the last 4 years. But come on, there really isn't an upside to Trump, end of quote. That's another reason that you shouldn't release it, because there is a credibility perception. And again, it's a perception because Hannity, Carlson, and Laura Ingraham have not been able to defend themselves on it. Yeah. We don't know what the defense is on it. But the perception is there, which is why they should have released it outright in another way. Mm. I don't know whether you go to the same people that are testifying right now, or maybe they've got, you know, Taibbi and Schellenberger and Barry Weiss and everybody else, and say, look, we just want a. Here's the thing about the tapes. The January 6th committee released exactly what they wished to release. Mm-hmm. Anything they didn't release, they didn't want released.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you focus on.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
But to me, our point was always political on this. We want everything to be released, always. And we stated that, even though we have some of our listeners that take us out of context as to what we stated when we brought this up first on, I believe it was Wednesday's show, either Tuesday or, yeah, Wednesday's show, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, I think. Yeah. Even though you take us out of context, we want it to be the most politically effective release immediately. Where, as we stated before, nobody's defending Fauci right now. Why? Because the information is out there. You finally had Democrats attacking Taibbi and Matt Schellenberger and those involved in the Twitter files, even though they didn't really know who was involved in it. They knew Taibbi and whatever. But they're forcing them, and it was extremely weak from the Democrats. From what I saw, I didn't see a strong Democrat point. They're attacking Taibbi and Schellenberger and the others, but it's weak because they're backed against the wall and they have no other choice. Mm-hmm. So their arguments are extremely poor. But when you do it correctly and effectively, and that was our point, we're all for that. Our point politically with the Republican Party was the fact that, yes, these are important things to bring out, but you also have to understand what the public is concerned with right now, and you need to be impounding inflation every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You need to still be pounding those things. You cannot be caught, because your goal is to win independence. That's what it is. That's what your goal is. You're not going to win, you know, Republicans, Democrats, the prize is independence.
Yeah.
And independence right now, look at this president and go, this guy's horrible. Mm-hmm. But if you're not talking about what they care about, they've heard about January 6th a million times. January 6th did not affect them personally. They might care about it, but it's way down on the list.
Well, and also by releasing it wide, then you put it in the hands of the media, and hopefully those people that we follow and read, and a lot of people on the right will follow and read, will do the work for you, and you can focus as a party on the issues.
Right.
And that's how that plays out. And that's how that should play out. Look, we all know that the January 6th committee was bogus.
Well, the public knew it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we stated what we stated, because they failed miserably because it was viewed as a partisan exercise.
Right. Yeah.
Don't attack back with what can be perceived as a partisan exercise when you don't have to.
Right. And
well,
you put it out there and then let the media do their work. Some great minds are going to pick it apart, and it plays out in the media, and that assessment can, you know, however it the American people choose to prioritize it in their life. Okay, great. They can, if it's Andrew McCarthy, whoever it is, all of that plays out. The media's doing the work on that while you're doing the work of the American people and the concerns.
Right.
The border, inflation, and everything else right now that's on the table.
Well, but you're also going to have people in the media that will focus on what the January 6th committee did. But that's already out there.
Yeah.
What isn't out there is everything
else that
the Democrats didn't want released. There is nothing new
that the media can get a hold of.
Right.
There's nothing you can add to that. You can't do any more than they've already done. There's really nowhere else to go with that part of it. So, you know, and hopefully that's the way it's going to play out. Thank you, Speaker McCarthy, for listening to Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, I just, again, what I want is, it's very simple. And I'm amazed how it's not a lot, but I'm still amazed how people don't understand what our point is. Our point is to get the win every time on every conservative argument and every argument of truth. That's our goal. Mm. Our goal isn't to lose. Our goal is to win every argument.
Yeah.
When it's not being done effectively, we have a problem with it.
Well, especially when so much of the heavy lifting is done for you.
Yeah. It's already, well, on January 6th, it's been done. Yeah. The public didn't buy, the public didn't buy what the Democrats were selling. And it didn't matter if they had Liz Cheney and Kissinger on. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
It was pretty obvious. Well, you weren't able to cross-examine anything. And the public early on knew it was a partisan exercise.
Yeah.
So you don't respond with the partisan exercise.
Right.
You do the opposite. You get the imagery right and you get the substance right. That's how you win in politics. This isn't rocket science. Mm-hmm. And that's why I get frustrated at times.
Yeah.
With the Republicans.
Yeah. Which is not new.
No.
Our frustrations go back for the ages with the Republican Party.
Well, but, look, some of the same people like, McCarthy sucks, McCarthy sucks, a month ago. Oh, he's doing the right thing. No, it was absolutely the right thing. Well, no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
The right thing.
Right.
They didn't do it. They didn't release it. Now, it may become more effective, and that's fine. But you wait. You can't give the Democrats an inch. Not an inch. You win every argument of substance and imagery.
Yeah.
But you win both. If you've got the imagery, you've got the substance to back it up. You don't want to be the Democrats, which is all allegations, all imagery, and then when it comes down to backing it up, they can't do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we know the Republicans can win because all the polling across the board shows that on the major issues, the Republicans are winning.
You've really got so much done for you. It's the follow through. Look, I think they've done a good job on so far with the committees and the hearings that have been out there.
Yes. So do I.
The unfortunate part of that is that most of the American people don't pay too much attention to it, but that's where you take what you have learned and then you promote it again through your messaging, and that has to be done repeatedly, and hopefully that's going to be the case. The campaigning for 24 has already begun, and it's not just about the White House. You're going to have to look. It's don't believe that it's a given that wherever the media is right now on their assessment of the breakdown in the Senate and how it really doesn't favor Democrats, and it doesn't favor Democrats. It favors the GOP taking the Senate in 24, but you got to keep the House and you got to get the Senate, and you need to approach it as if you're right now far, far, far underwater politically in all the polls. And hopefully that's going to be done. That it's going to require constant work. As bad as Joe Biden is and as many things that he's doing to trip himself up and his party, it still requires work to earn a vote and then ultimately keep those votes for the party.
Well, I've got hope for change.
Well, how about hope, but right now, no change. Hope, but we'll visit change later. Or change, but yeah, we're doomed. No hope. No hope for you. Wow. It will.
There's something Nazi in there somewhere. No hope for you.
The hope Nazi instead of the soup Nazi. No hope for you. But those, those are the things that hopefully will take shape. What I love about DeSantis is absolutely on point. And I haven't seen him in an interview or a speech where he hasn't been. And if he's going to get in, whether he gets the nomination or not, I think he's going to be good for the GOP, because I think there are going to be some clear points that he's going to make on stage in interviews and everything else. Look, if he decides not to get in, he's still going to be good in terms of campaigning for the GOP.
Well, that's where he hits every point effectively, and he doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't need to.
Doesn't need to lie. That's been my point. As I said, one of the biggest problems we have in the United States today is lying.
Right.
And the acceptance of lying by the people.
He doesn't need hyperbole.
If I'm in this tribe, then we should lie too because they lie. Right. No, you don't act like they do. You don't need to lie. They right. need to lie. Stop lying on our side.
Right.
And I say on our side, it's the issues that we agree with. You agree with me on the issues, there's no reason to lie.
Right.
On any of the issues, none.
It may be boring, but you got to stay on the issues.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. You know, when we look at the censorship and the fascist mindset that exists in the Democratic Party right now, you know, when you see the anti, you know, First Amendment stuff that you saw yesterday with the Democrats and the questioning of Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, and then this story. Minnesota lawmakers are mulling a change to state law that would log alleged bias incidents, even when they are not considered a crime, leading one lawmaker to say the plan would create a thought crime database. Listen to this. A bill pitched in January, of course coming from Democrats, would allow people to report perceived bias relation incidents, such as alleged slurs and verbal attacks that would fall outside the hate crimes compiled annually by the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, which means the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension would have a database of people complaining of alleged slurs or perceived bias-related incidents that were not crimes.
Yeah.
My God. Each alleged incident would include information about the perceived offender and victim relevant to that bias. Quote, Representative Walter Hudson told Fox News Digital, quote, it's a very insidious and conniving way to get the camel's nose under the tent of expanding the scope of government scrutiny of speech beyond crimes and assault. Hudson also worried the language of the bill, which encompasses not just race, but also gender identity and gender expression. So, for example, could you imagine? One of our Minnesota affiliates, and we're on there saying, sorry, a biological man can't be a biological woman just because they say so. And that is an alleged, so all of a sudden, Red Eye Radio, we're in the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension because of something we stated. You know, I'm gonna we played the Schellenberger cut earlier where he talked about how terrifying it is where the Democrats and liberals are going in this country right now. Think about that. That's what they wish to do. Understand the mindset and just how radical the mainstream of the Democratic Party is today.
Oh, yeah.
It's absolutely frightening.
Yeah, it is.
Because take a law like, you know, the proposal in Minnesota and have conservatives in charge with the ability to prosecute or the ability to collect the same things and, you know, under this particular law by what their perception of a bias is. And liberals would be going crazy.
Well, I mean, that's it. But this is, once again, the left insists on coming after you based on words. We weren't lying when we said it was going to happen. And then California did it. Of course, that was overturned. But they would outlaw things they disagree with. You start with deeming things as hate speech. And then
It's not long before they're walking in the churches and saying, during your sermon, you said this.
As he writes, the bill is replete with the term actual or perceived identity. So the intention of whoever is being accused of exhibiting bias is not even relevant. The only thing that matters is how the person making the report feels. If the person making the report feels as though they have been a victim of an incident or bias, then they have been the victim of an incident or bias, and it's reported to the government criminal database.
Oh, that doesn't open things up completely for somebody who has a vendetta.
We're going to create a database of all these subjective, arbitrary, whimsical feelings that people have had, not anything objective or tangible at all.
Wow. So if you've got a vendetta, just, you know, you could just accuse anybody and everybody. That's not how I identify.
The Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, I just, you know, I just read this story. It just had come up, I believe, like at, you know, early this morning on Fox. Minnesota lawmakers slammed bill that would create thought crime database of alleged bias incidents. And I'll just read it again in case you just, you know, caught in the middle of it, because it's fascinating, especially with the hearings going on right now, the First Amendment, weaponization of government, Yeah, this couldn't be abused, could it? Minnesota lawmakers are mulling a change to state law that would log alleged bias incidents even when they aren't considered a crime, leading one lawmaker to say the plan would create a thought crime database. A bill pitched in January would allow people to report perceived bias-related incidents such as alleged slurs and verbal attacks that would fall outside of the hate crimes compiled annually by the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. Each alleged incident would include information about the perceived offender and victim relative to the bias, said Representative Walter Hudson, a Republican in Minnesota. It's a very insidious and conniving way to get the camel's nose under the tent of expanding the scope of government scrutiny of speech beyond crimes and assault. Hudson said he worried that the language of the bill, which encompasses not just race, but also gender identity and gender expression, is overbroad and could ultimately impinge upon religious liberty. He noted that he found the original draft of the bill problematic, but noted the language of the bill has been included has been amended to include incidents that do not reach the levels of crimes. The bill is replete with the term, quote, actual or perceived identity. So the intention of whoever is being accused is exhibiting bias is not relevant. The only thing that matters is how the person making the report feels. If the person making the report feels as though they have been the victim of an incident of bias, then they have been the victim of an incident of bias. And we're going to create a database of all of these subjective, arbitrary, whimsical feelings that people have had, not anything objectable or tangible at all, and the government will have a database on it. Why do you have a database on it? For what? What's the reason for having the database?
Right. Why would you keep that information?
The lawmaker voiced his concerns about the bill during a committee hearing earlier this year when he raised the alarm about the government keeping track of incidents in which no law has been broken. When he asked what sort of incident of alleged hate or bias could fall under the purview of the law, Hudson noted that Public Commissioner Rebecca Lucero offered the example of someone yelling an insult out of their car window. Lucero did not respond to Fox News Digital's request for comment by time of publication. Walter Hudson writes, she went on to explain that this bill would give them data around what is outside the purview of the Human Rights Act, where there is speech and associated related action that is inappropriately used around bias-motivated incidents. Huh? clear as mud. Perhaps an example would help. Earlier in the testimony, the commissioner offered one. A person on the side of the road gets mean things yelled at them by a passing car. It makes them sad. That's the sort of thing they want documented and tracked. It seems very clear, based on their focus on motivation, that they're more concerned about what's going on in people's heads, which is protected speech, and that's thought crime. Hudson said he believes the law may be looking at trying to basically profile communities, and the implication is that different communities will be scored based on how hateful they are in order to create narratives to further future legislative action. Hudson is also concerned the bill could be used to effectively outlaw biblical expression. He noted that during the committee hearing, when he voiced his objections, he did not receive a direct answer when he asked if the bill's provisions could apply to someone posting on social media about their religious beliefs regarding sexuality and gender.
What about a pastor or a priest during a sermon? Yep.
It very much presents a direct threat, a chilling effect at the very least, to normal, common Christian doctrine, biblical expression, and for that matter, all faiths. The bill has also drawn criticism from the left, prompting a letter of concern from the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota. In the letter sent to Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee Chair Kelly Moeller that was provided to Fox News Digital, the ACLU policy director warned that the expansive provisions of this bill introduce the prospect that speech and or associations unrelated to a particular action may be inappropriately used to infer biased motivation. While the individual's words or associations may be repugnant to some, if they are not directly connected to a specific action, using them to impose criminal penalties does raise constitutional concerns. Hudson said the bill is unlike any other legislation he is aware of in the United States. I don't believe there's anywhere else in the United States where government is documenting incidents that are not crimes in an effort to try to profile communities as being more hateful than others, adding that the law he expects will pass resembles legislation one might expect in Canada or the UK. Ooh, it's true.
Well, and if they are compiling this database, is there going to be public access to the database?
Yeah, don't know.
Because that, to me, sounds like doxing. You're building a list of people you are deeming threats or, you know, I don't know what the point of compiling the database is if it is not actionable with prosecution. If it is not something against the law, you're just trying to earmark these individuals for what? For surveillance?
Well, I know. I think Hudson brought up the other great point, that the other thing it could be used for is liberals then will use that as a database to promote what communities show more bias based not on any type of incident,
right,
but on the perception of how many allegations there are, even though it's never been proven that the action even ever happened, that you can then put out a thing saying these communities are biased because we had this many reports here, this many reports here, this many reports here, which is just allegations that I have been offended. Wow. This is just understand where liberalism is going. I think that's the important thing for people to understand. This is where liberalism and then the Democratic Party is going.
And what if I report that the lawmakers responsible for this bill are offensive and I'm offended by them? Are they immune from being in the database?
Well, it depends. If you say you're offended,
no one can challenge that.
Why? Who can?
Nobody. You can't say, because tomorrow I can say, and it doesn't matter. I don't have to prove anything to you. All I have to do is say I'm offended for whatever reason, and it doesn't matter the, you know, I identify as or I. No, no, No. I'm offended. That's what it comes down to. I'm offended by something. We're going to build a database of people who offended other people.
Well, for example, you and I were having a little bit of fun earlier at the lead headline in Fox News. The lead. Mm-hmm. Representative Boebert announces she will become a grandmother at age 36. Mm-hmm. And your immediate response was, she's not 36.
I thought she was older.
She's old. See? Yeah. Ageism. Mm-hmm. You've offended somebody. That gets reported.
I don't know that she's offended by that. Prove it.
If she said she was offended, or if somebody was offended by hearing you say that about her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no. What if you're offended by something they say about someone else, but you aren't part of that community or whatever it is, that you're not the individual and you don't represent, you're not representative of that group?
Well, as we know, liberalism has gone, if you're offended, you're offended. It doesn't really matter what was said.
What if
it's the fact that you are offended?
What if I am offended by the fact that something wasn't offensive?
Well, if somebody was not politically correct, then you could probably make that point. Look, we're talking liberalism here.
Right. I'm offended by the things they didn't say.
If the doctrine and the rule book says you are offended and it doesn't matter what you say, for example, the liberal transgender activist movement. I go back to Ben Shapiro on, what was that? What doctor was he on? Was it Drew?
Dr. Drew, on back when he was on CNN Headline News.
Dr. Drew. And there was a transgender woman on. Mm-hmm. And Shapiro said something like, well, the science is you're not a biological.
Right.
You know, you're not a biological woman.
Right.
And then the transgender woman wanted to fight him, take him outside and fight him.
Mm-hmm.
And Shapiro's like, see?
Yeah.
Right here. And everybody that was there on the panel, all the liberals, even though they agreed that Shapiro was telling the truth.
Right.
It didn't matter that he was telling the scientific truth. It's the fact that Shapiro should have known that by telling the truth, he would offend the transgender woman, and therefore Shapiro was wrong.
Right. You can get threatened with violence. You're the bad guy.
Right. Being threatened with violence wasn't the problem. It's that Shapiro should have known that telling the truth would have driven the transgender woman to violence against him.
Right.
Therefore, it's Shapiro's fault. If that's the philosophy of the liberals, then what can't be offensive?
Yeah. And Ben, by the way, missed a golden opportunity. He should have looked at the guy and said, well, I don't fight women. And then everybody's head would have exploded and the show would be over. Tell me where I'm wrong.
I would have been, that would have been the perfect response.
Yeah.
Well, no, he would have been insensitive.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think he's a woman.
Look, but if you say right now that the Democratic Party cannot define a woman, which they can't.
No, they
that
can't.
Is viewed as an insult. Somebody's offended by that.
Right, right, right.
Because being a woman is whatever you want to be. It doesn't need to be defined. Mm-hmm.
You can't define it. The fact that you try and define it is offensive.
Is offensive, yes.
Definitions are offensive.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitions of anything are offensive. Math is offensive. That's my feeling on math.
Math with feelings. We talked about this. If we talked about, you know, that in schools now.
Yeah.
That teaching math with feelings, if you don't believe you should teach math with feelings, you're offending somebody.
My wine bladder is empty. That's offensive.
That was offensive yesterday as we were talking about wine bladders, I will admit. I'm okay, not offensive.
Mm-hmm.
A tad uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Any talk about it?
A tad squeamish.
Hey, these older guys on the radio don't want to talk about bladders. They say it's uncomfortable.
We were talking about boxed wines that are actually in bladders.
Yes.
So we got into bladder wine talk.
Yes.
And by the way, we are not like Joe Rogan high on mushrooms on the show.
I can't read the year on the bladder.
You saw that Rogan opened up his comedy club. Where he said, basically, this is a free speech place, and he's up on stage saying, I'm higher than I've ever been on mushrooms. Something you will never hear me say publicly. By the way, I'm offended by that. Put that in the...
Yeah, that's right. The mushroom community wants to talk to you. The stand-up scene in Austin is exploding. You could probably go down there and spend a week and see, you know, every night see a number of different comics up down there. But what's offensive? You know, you shouldn't be able to draw a line. If I'm offended by the lawmakers who wrote this bill, then they have to go on the list.
In the database.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, Visa and MasterCard have backed off their plans to track gun purchases.
Yeah, it's a smart move.
Yeah.
I don't know why you even float that idea. Because even though you back off, that's still going to leave a bad taste in the mouth of many people who practice their Second Amendment right.
Yep.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Download our Red Eye Radio app today, and you can listen when and where you want.
And thank you.
Well, there it is. Washington Post had it. DeSantis indicates privately he intends to run in 2024.
All right.
A super PAC that seeks to draft DeSantis into the race launched Thursday and is likely to serve as an approved outside spending vehicle for his campaign, three people familiar with the planning said. And DeSantis will visit the early nominating states of Iowa on Friday, Nevada on Saturday, as he tours the country promoting his memoir. Public and private movements underline how far along DeSantis and his allies are in preparation for the 2024 campaign, even as a Florida governor has not said publicly he will enter the race. He still do not expect him to announce until after the Florida state legislature session ends in May.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right.
In recent conversations, he described his presidential plans without any caveats that would suggest he's still deciding, according to two people familiar with his comments, who, like others interviewed for this story, spoke on condition of anonymity to share private remarks.
Yeah, so, all right.
Will be interesting. It'll be a real interesting primary season. Now, when will he announce? You know, I don't know. And, you know, you think about it. I mean, you've got, you would have Trump. Ramaswamy, you would have Nikki Haley, and DeSantis.
Mm-hmm. and probably Kasich.
Well, I mean, is Pompeo actually going to get in?
I think he is. If he's not, okay, this just hit me. As I was about to say it, it was actually hitting me. If he's not going to run, then his Twitter posts seem really odd. because it just looks like he's in almost Hollywood campaign mode, right? Like out of a movie, right? Last I looked, he's got a really great picture of his family and the whole thing. And everything that he's posting about, it's all about issues and mostly geopolitical stuff. And of course, I think the weight loss was a big part of it. I think he's wanted to run for a long time. The question would be, how crowded does the field get? Pence is in. So then you look at where the energy is. Well, it really comes down to two. Trump and DeSantis. I mean, that's where the energy is.
It's interesting because I'm reading Peggy Noonan's column about DeSantis is definitely running, and then he presents himself as a serious, forward-leaning, pro-business, anti-woke conservative Republican. Mm. And then she has here Mr. DeSantis is a big dog, and it isn't only Donald Trump trying to take him down. A prospective competitor called recently to share his thoughts. Now, who would this be? All right, you ready for this?
Okay.
DeSantis is a cheap imitation of Trump. It's Fox News soundbites and cowboy boots with 2-inch heels. Others retail the gossip that he's on the spectrum, whatever that means. I quote, and this is what this person said, I don't think normal people have more than an impression, a blank face sitting behind a square desk signing bills. He is often surrounded sometimes oddly by grade school children. You imagine one of the 8-year-olds announcing somberly to the press, we agree, we're too young to hear about gender fluidity. That's how that's how this person wrote it. And this is a prospective competitor. Now,
that's clearly Mike Pence. Mike Pence, Breaking Bad. Yeah. Oh, please be Mike Pence.
Oh,
please be the all new Mike Pence.
The new Mike Pence.
He's gonna walk down a ramp with loud rock and roll music, fog coming out everywhere. He's in a big arena. Oh. He's announcing, "Ooh yeah!" Oh, I want that to be Mike Pence so bad. If it's not John Bolton, then I'm guessing it's Donald Trump.
Who is that prospective competitor?
Mm. If it's not John Bolton, then it's Trump.
Well, unless it's not anybody from the Republican side.
Uh-huh.
Unless it's Biden. Unless it's Harris who said that.
It totally could be Biden.
Maybe it was Marianne Williamson.
Right. Yeah.
But
it's Hillary.
And then she's right. Then Peggy Noonan writes, he's tough, unadorned, and carries a vibe. As I've said, that he might unplug your life support to recharge his cell phone.
What the hell does that mean? And where does that even come from?
I have no idea. His supporters shrug.
By the way, how low is his battery on his cell phone?
His supporters shrug. He's not warm and cuddly. I don't think voters are looking for warm and cuddly, but they do want even keeled, a normal man or woman who's a leader, who's got guts and vision of where the country wants to go.
he'll as unplug I, your life support yeah. to charge his cell phone. Give me a break.
As I watched the Reagan speech, library speech, I thought this candidacy is going to have power. He wasn't inspired or eloquent, but plain spoken and brisk. His address was workmanlike from notes, but it's all packed. It's all together. It packed a punch. Governors, he observed in his book, The Courage to Be Free, have to deliver. It's an executive office. They create a record, and you can measure what they did. Legislators merely have to talk and vote on congenial bills. It's hard to measure their effectiveness. They are not required to lead. In the library speech, he pointed to his achievements, a strong state economy, Florida's unemployment rate 3.5% when he took office, and in December 2022, after the pandemic, it's 2.5%. A good state balance sheet, a generally light pro-individual freedom hand on COVID. He got the schools open. His state is one people are moving into, not out of. He is a culture warrior, but between the lines, he suggests he's also pragmatic, practical, and gets things done. This may be his real superpower. When during Hurricane Ian, the bridge to Pine Island was washed away, the state had it up and operating a week later. That wasn't talk. It was knowing the innards of government and making it deliver.
All right.
I don't think he's running as Trump without the psychopathology. I think he's running as a serious, forward-leaning, pro-business, anti-woke conservative with populist inflections. His strategy now, draw as much from the Trump quadrant as possible, slowly try to leech him of support. One thing about Trump supporters is you win their respect if you speak of things in a no-going-back way. When Mr. Trump in his 2015 announcement spoke of illegal immigrants as rapists and drug smugglers, those giving him a hearing didn't roar because they literally think all illegal immigrants are rapists and drug smugglers. They roared because they knew there was no going back from language like that. It meant he really would try to control the border. The focus on, I'm reading directly from Peggy Noonan, by the way. Mm-hmm. The focus on wokeness is Mr. DeSantis' illegal immigration. He wants the only issue in a Republican field, and as the year gets deeper, move on from there. A political veteran present before and after the library speech found Mr. DeSantis impressive, but saw a weakness. He's on broadcast almost all the time, not receive. He likes to talk. He makes eye contact. There's back and forth. But my sense is that he's thinking about what he's next going to tell you, not what you're going to ask. Still, in the end, the veteran sends something electric. You know that feeling you get when you're in a room and it's obvious to every person in that room, from 10 people to 50,000 people, that no kidding, this guy could be the president. He's got it. So there you go. And it's interesting because when Trump said about the illegal immigrants, I knew exactly what he was saying.
Of course.
He wasn't calling all rapists and drug smugglers illegal immigrants. That's how it was portrayed. Mm. And I do think that...
Wasn't calling immigrants, all immigrants, yeah, illegal rapists and drug smugglers. Right. Drug smugglers. Right.
The thing about Trump, as we said, people, number one, he'd been around for a while promoting a variety of issues, but his economic populism, which turned into, because this is the one thing that people don't like to admit, but we've said it bluntly, he didn't end NAFTA. Mm-hmm. He changed the name of NAFTA. 99% of USMCA is NAFTA. Mm-hmm. But he framed it that he was going to change it, and that was enough. Mm-hmm. On issues of the border, because the border was his issue, and economics, was his issue. There were things we think he did right. When he brought, what's his name from CNBC? And when he brought, You know, initially he was very economically populist, and then he brought in more capitalist.
Kudlow.
When he brought in Kudlow, when he brought in Steve Moore, at that point you said, okay, he's willing to hear, and that's all I cared about, is he willing to hear certain things?
Sure.
And again, he promoted what he did in an extremely populist way, but most of USMCA was just NAFTA updated for the technology of today. There were a couple of things that he did, but those things that we did, I believe, helped to damage building American cars in North America, as you and I talked about already. Mm. But for the most part, it really didn't have much an effect, and that was okay. And but the border was his. Running government like a business, hiring the right people. Now, some of those he can't use again.
I'm guessing Jeff Sessions is a no.
Yeah, well, he can't. For example, he can't say I hire the right people because the vast majority of people that work for him at a high level now are against him. Not all. You know, Richard Grenell, for example, people like that. Mm-hmm. But most, no, they would run against him. They would not wish him to win again. But he was viewed, when you take it overall, I'm getting into the minutia. Overall, he was viewed as somebody who will get things done. And my dad said this to me. He said, you know, one of these cycles, you're going to have somebody, the American public say, we need somebody who can get it done. Is DeSantis that person that they would choose? There is not a Democrat. Everybody knows. I mean, that's why Biden's numbers are as low as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And on the issues, everybody knows not only can he not solve the problems, he caused them.
Yeah.
And so is this what America's – and I don't know if this is what America's looking for. That's the question. If that's the perception – because that's the perception that I get from him – is he gets things done, and I agree. I have no idea what she was talking about. Where
would turn the life support off to charge his cell phone?
That's weird. That I don't understand.
That was just a weird.
You and I both made it almost an appointment during Hurricane Ian to watch him.
Yeah, you know, I was actually in fact proactively seeking out some of the videos posted by, because I obviously can't watch local media from Florida, but what you can do is, because they all have a YouTube channel, you can go and you can watch their reports.
Yep.
And when you watch their reports, there were, I don't know how many, that either referred to him or included him in the daily briefings and everything else. And there was no pushback. You had a couple of people, you know, MSNBC and the usual suspects that, you know, just kind of scoffed, but there was no real legitimate criticism of him at all on handling that hurricane.
No, and then after the press conferences were impressive, but then you're like, okay, what is tangible that you can actually see? Because most of it you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you did see after it hit, there were a lot of people on the street saying, oh, man, the people are here already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the crews are here already fixing the lines and everything else. But it really, and she does make a great point about that bridge. Once that bridge was together in a week, that was unprecedented, and that got a lot of publicity, and then everybody shut up.
Yep.
There wasn't any criticism, really, of DeSantis. It was like even liberal networks knew it was the time to move on. But it's really what the people of the United States are looking for in this election, and I can't tell you, I know what I want. But no one will give me what I want because the executive branch can't move that quickly. I don't care who it is, in there. But I know what I want legislatively, you know, who's going to end up being that person that convinces Republicans by the time this is, well, it won't be over yet. It'll be a year and what, 3 months from now, probably?
Mm.
We'll probably know, or a year and 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, by May we'll probably know, right? You'll have an idea.
Yeah, the numbers are. Yeah, it'll be the inevitable.
I don't honestly know what the Republican Party wants. There's too many factions of the Republican Party, and I don't know. I don't know if they'll move on. If Trump gets indicted, you know, there's that story out that the grand jury in New York invited him.
Yeah.
And that means that you're near the end. And I don't know. You saw some saying, well, this, because they invited him voluntarily, it means they're giving him a chance And so they're probably going to indict him on something. I don't know whether that's true or not. I don't know. But if he gets indicted, does that boost him again? Is he viewed then as a victim of deep state? I don't know. Right. Does it make people say, okay, he's a victim. He got screwed over. Because he did. He got screwed. There's no way you can look at the first 3 years and the Mueller investigation, everything that was false. It was all created by the Hillary campaign. There's no way you can't say he didn't get screwed over.
Right.
But will that make a difference? 866-90-RED-EYE.
Hi, I'm Jen Loomis, a transport safety expert at J.J. Keller, and I'm here to share a tip on compliance, safety, accountability. Drivers should be familiar with how their actions affect their motor carrier's compliance, safety, accountability, or CSA score, in the 7 basic categories. The driver fitness score is based on the physical and medical qualifications of drivers. The vehicle maintenance category requires drivers to know how to inspect CMVs and secure cargo. Hours of service compliance relies on drivers keeping accurate records of duty and abiding by hours of service limits. The unsafe driving category is affected by unsafe driving behaviors, such as failing to wear a seatbelt or obey traffic laws. Drivers should understand the drug and alcohol prohibitions to prevent hurting their carrier's controlled substances and alcohol basic score. And drivers who transport hazmat must know how to safely transport hazardous materials according to the regulations. The final basic category, crash prevention, is based on how many crashes a motor carrier has been involved in, so drivers must know how to drive safely to avoid crashes. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller & Associates. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE. And get a word in edgewise. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, it was fascinating yesterday. We played some audio throughout the show. I want to play more here from the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. And they had a Twitter Files hearing yesterday, and they had Matt Taibbi, who was the first of the reporters to publish anything from the Twitter files. And also Michael Schellenberger was there. He was also part of it. They had those two reporters.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing seeing the Democrats finally forced to confront this, because they've never been forced to confront it.
Right.
They had to do something.
Right.
You know, they've never been forced to do it, and they wouldn't voluntarily go near it. Maybe a couple little shots here and there, but it wasn't effective. And when you saw the polling of the American public, the polling believes, you know, the public believes, not the polling, but the public believes that Twitter was biased and that government helped to influence it.
Yeah. Right.
And so watching the Democrats was pretty hilarious, even from the beginning. When Representative Plaskett, the ranking member for the Democrats, actually, you know, called them so-called journalists.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wanted to play the opening remarks. Since he was the beginning, he started it all, and he got the initial criticism, Matt Taibbi, yesterday in front of the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of Government.
Chairman. Chairman
Jordan, Ranking Member Plaskett, members of the Select Committee, thank you for having me today. My name is Matt Taibbi. I've been a reporter for 30 years and a staunch advocate of the First Amendment. Much of that time was spent at Rolling Stone magazine. Ranking Member Plaskett, I'm not a so-called journalist. I've won the National Magazine Award, the I.F. Stone Award for Independent Journalism, and I've written 10 books, including 4 New York Times New York Times bestsellers. I'm now the editor of the online magazine Racket on the independent platform Substack. I'm here today because of a series of events that began late last year when I received a note from a source online. It read, "Are you interested in doing a deep dive into what censorship and manipulation was going on at Twitter?" A week later, the first of what became known as the Twitter Files reports came out. To say these attracted intense public interest would be an understatement. My computer looked like a Vegas slot machine as the first tweet about the blockage of the Hunter Biden laptop story registered 143 million impressions and 30 million engagements. But it wasn't until a week after the first report, after Michael Schellenberger, Barry Weiss, and other researchers joined the search of the files, that we started to grasp the significance of this story. The original promise of the internet was that it might democratize the exchange of information globally. A free internet would overwhelm all attempts to control information flow, its very existence a threat to anti-democratic forms of government everywhere. What we found in the files was a sweeping effort to reverse that promise and use machine learning and other tools to turn the internet into an instrument of censorship and social control. Unfortunately, our own government appears to be playing a lead role. We saw the first hints in communications between Twitter executives before the 2020 election, when we read things like "flagged by DHS" or "please see attached report from FBI for potential misinformation." This would be attached to an Excel spreadsheet with a long list of names whose accounts were often suspended shortly after. Again, Ranking Member Plaskett, I would note that the evidence of Twitter-government relationship includes lists of tens of thousands of names on both the left and right. The people affected include Trump supporters, but also left-leaning sites like Consortium and Truthout, the leftist South American channel Telesur, the Yellow Vest Movement. That, in fact, is a key point of the Twitter files, that it's neither a left nor right issue. Following the trail of communications between Twitter and the federal government across tens of thousands of emails led to a series of revelations. Mr. Chairman, we summarized and submitted them to the committee in the form of a new Twitter files thread, which was also released to the public this morning. We learned Twitter, Facebook, Google, and other companies developed a formal system for taking in moderation requests from every corner of government, from the FBI, the DHS, the HHS, DOD, the Global Engagement Center at State, even the CIA. For every government agency scanning Twitter, there were perhaps 20 quasi-private entities doing the same thing, including Stanford's Election Integrity Partnership, NewsGuard, the Global Disinformation Index, and many others, many taxpayer-funded. A focus of this fast-growing network, as Mike noted, is making lists of people whose opinions, beliefs, associations, or sympathies are deemed misinformation, disinformation, or malinformation. That last term is just a euphemism for true but inconvenient. Undeniably, the making of such lists is a form of digital McCarthyism. Ordinary Americans are not just being reported to Twitter for deamplification or deplatforming, but to firms like PayPal, digital advertisers like Xandr, and crowdfunding sites like GoFundMe. These companies can and do refuse service to law-abiding people and businesses whose only crime is falling afoul of a distant, faceless, unaccountable, algorithmic judge. As someone who grew up a traditional ACLU liberal, this mechanism for punishment and deprivation without due process is horrifying. Another troubling aspect is the role of the press, which should be the people's last line of defense in such cases. But instead of investigating these groups, journalists partnered with them. If Twitter declined to remove an account right away, government agencies and NGOs would call reporters for the New York Times, Washington Post, and other outlets, who in turn would call Twitter, demanding to know why action had not yet been taken. Effectively, news media became an arm of a state-sponsored thought-policing system. I'm running out of time, so I'll just sum up and say it's just not possible to instantly arrive at truth. It is, however, possible, becoming technologically possible, to instantly define and enforce a political consensus online, which I believe is what we're looking at. This is a grave threat to people of all political persuasions, The First Amendment and an American population accustomed to the right to speak is the best defense left against the censorship industrial complex. If the latter can knock over our first and most important constitutional guarantee, these groups will have no serious opponent left anywhere. If there's anything the Twitter files show, it's that we're in danger of losing this most precious right, without which all democratic rights are impossible.
That was his opening statement yesterday. The response from the Democrats, what did they attack? And, you know, we remember when it came out that the advisors for Hunter Biden said, we're going to go after everybody. We're going to destroy their reputations. You know, and remember that came out publicly. Mm-hmm. And that was like people went, well, that's a real bad move that you're making there.
Yeah.
Well, it's exactly what the Democrats did yesterday. The Democrats, and because it would be it was so long. We just don't have, we don't have the time in 5 hours to play everything that needed that you would want to hear. Most of it you can find on YouTube if you actually do the searching for it. You can find it. But they tried to portray Matt Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger as stooges of Trump. Mm-hmm. Was really amazing, to the point where Jim Jordan had to cut in and go, excuse me, are you Trump supporters? No. Who did you vote for? Biden. You know, and as you heard Matt Taibbi there, he is a traditional ACLU liberal. And the traditional, maybe not the modern, but the old school ACLU, certainly not the modern ACLU, used to be for freedom of speech. They're not now, but that's the point he was trying to make, that that's what he was, a traditional liberal in that sense. They also tried to use the money angle. You did this to get rich.
Yeah, right.
And he said, well, I don't know what you're talking about, because everything has come out of our pockets. Nobody paid for anything. Their transportation to look at to go to Twitter and look at these files, the transportation, hotels, staff, everything came out of their pocket. Nobody paid for anything here. And then the insinuation was, well, you'll get rich in the future about this because you can write a book. So they attempted to attack that. So they attempted to say that, you know, basically they were Trump stooges. They did it for the money. When that really didn't work, then they would ask questions, you know, for a yes and no answer, and then make a complete, you know, statement and accusation against Taibbi or Schellenberger, and then, I'm out of time, there's no time for you to respond.
Yeah.
And so there were, you know, some unanswered questions that you would like to see answered. And then they went after Taibbi because they said, you know, who's your source?
Right.
Because he said, you know, I do have a source in this. The initial source that contacted him is a source. And they said, well, was it Elon Musk? And he said, well, I'm not going to discuss my sources. Well, if it's not, you're saying it wasn't Elon Musk or was Elon Musk, then we're going to assume that it was Elon Musk. And it was like, what? Yeah. Well, then you do whatever you want to do. And she goes, well, then what was the time? When did you get this? He goes, no, I'm not going to tell you that because that goes directly to the source.
Right.
Well, no, it's a chronology, which leads to the source. So we're not going to do it.
Right.
And Jim Jordan was like, my God, can you believe this? These are Democrats trying to get a reporter. Democrats who for how long have been promoting the fact that no, reporters should never be forced to release their sources. And here are the Democrats just screaming and pounding, trying to find out Matt Taibbi's sources. It was a zoo. I mean, it was really interesting watching.
And look back at the Trump years where Trump, you know, talked about the enemy, talked about the media being the enemy, and then the media just went on forever.
Yep.
You can't do that. You can't do that. We'll be targeted if you do that. You can't do that. You can't do that. But where were the liberals screaming yesterday that you can't go after these journalists here the way they were, and pressuring them and insisting on them giving up their sources. Where was that? I didn't see that anywhere. The liberals were MIA.
Yeah. Yeah. The fascists were out.
Yeah.
The liberals the traditional liberals weren't there.
No doubt.
But it was amazing to watch. And knowing, you know, that these are liberals. And Jim Jordan said it. He said, I said it at the beginning of all of this. He said it last week. Doesn't matter whether you're liberal if you don't buy. But they're not. They're, again, the old liberal is not what the new liberal is today. That's insane. You and I were talking about the no labels party or the forward party. And it's like, you know, the no labels party, which is a label, by the way, as you observed.
Yeah.
The fact is they're a Democratic party is what they are. I mean, they were formed by Democrats, formed by liberals, but they believe there's a little in because they're not insane liberals. And so that's why the Democrats were afraid of the no labels party. You don't hear the Republican Party say anything about it because they're like, oh no, they're going to try to whittle off some of Democrats out there who won't vote Republican. And that could make us lose the 2024 election. But there are liberals out there, not a lot, but there are liberals out there that still believe in freedom of the speech. And you've seen them. You've seen it. Matt Taibbi, Michael Schellenberger. And Schellenberger, by the way, has been one of the leaders. He believes, just like Bjorn Lomborg, that climate change is happening and man has some kind of an influence. Mm-hmm. But he believes that everything that the left is doing in this country is completely wrong, counterproductive, and puts this country in economic, energy, and national security suicide. I'll use my terms, but that's basically what he believes. And they're selling you a bill of goods. So they're really liberals who are looking for the truth, and they're not denying science. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carlin. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, coming up, we will hear from the other witness yesterday, Michael Schellenberger, because he had some interesting things to say. Also, Fauci was on, really didn't get asked, I don't believe, the tough questions that he should have by Brett Baer yesterday, but says that he did not. He denies excluding Robert Redfield, or excuse me, Robert Redfield, the former CDC director, that he didn't exclude him from the panel making decisions. Redfield says he did.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.
The Bigger Pockets portfolio of podcasts are worthy of your investment.
We're having a real conversation as real estate investors.
New episodes available every day.
It's important to buy where it makes money and not necessarily where you want to travel to.
Bigger Pockets, On the Market, Rookie Real Estate, or Money Podcast.
The purpose of flipping is to create more cash so then you can reinvest into other types of properties.
The Bigger Pockets Podcast, on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Welcome to Talkville,
the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast. Guest star Sarah Carter as Alicia Baker.
Although I didn't really work with her a lot. But Tom did, and they had some real big smoochy scenes.
Yeah. Should we talk about that?
Could there be any more sex? What was a 3-page makeout scene that just kept going?
Good Lord. We get it. They have chemistry.
Jump in now or catch up on any of the past seasons of Talkville on YouTube or wherever you listen.